Shtri Shudra Dvajabandunang Traina Shuti Gochara Karma Shreyasi Mudhanang Shreya Evang Bhavediha Iti Bharatamakhyanang Kripaya Munina Kritam. Out of compassion, the great sage Vyasadeva, who is very kind to the ignorant masses of people, thought it wise to edit the Vedas so that they might be assimilated by less intellectual persons. This would enable them to achieve the ultimate goal of life. Thus he compiled the great historical narration called Mahabharata, which is for women, laborers, and friends of the twice-born. Yatsan nidha vahumukhand dava magnayeda Mindrang cha samara ganang tarasa vichitya Labdha sabha maya kritad bhuta shrupa maya Digbyo haran nirpatayo bali madvarete. Because Krishna was near me, it was possible for me to conquer with great dexterity the powerful king of heaven Indradev, along with his demigod associates, and thus enable the fire god to devastate the Kandava forest. And only by Krishna's grace was the demon-maned Maya saved from the blazing Kandava forest, and thus we could build our assembly house of wonderful architectural workmanship, where all the princes assembled during the performance of Rajasuya Yajna and paid tributes to my brother Yudhisthira. Purport. The demon Maya Danava was an inhabitant of the forest Kandava, and when the Kandava forest was set on fire, he asked protection from Arjuna. Arjuna saved Maya Danava's life, and as a result of this, the demon felt obliged. He reciprocated by building a wonderfully assembled house for the Pandavas, which attracted the extraordinary attention of all state princes. They felt the supernatural power of the Pandavas, and thus, without grudge, all of them submitted and paid tributes to the emperor Yudhisthira. Demons possess wonderful and supernatural powers to create material wonders, and they are always disturbing elements of the society. The modern demons are the harmful material scientists who create some material wonders for disturbance in society. For example, the creation of nuclear weapons has caused some panic in human society. Maya Danava was a materialist like that, and he knew the art of creating such wonderful things. And yet, Lord Krishna wanted to kill him. When he was chased both by the fire and by the wheel of Lord Krishna, Maya Danava took shelter of a devotee, such as Arjuna, who saved them from the wrath of the fire and the wrath of Lord Sri Krishna. Therefore, devotees are more merciful than the Lord, and in devotional service, the mercy of a devotee is more valuable than the mercy of the Lord. Both the fire and the Lord ceased from chasing the demon as soon as both of them saw that the demon was given shelter by such a devotee as Arjuna. This demon, feeling obliged to Arjuna, wanted to do him some service to show his gratefulness, but Arjuna declined to accept anything from him in exchange. Lord Sri Krishna, however, being pleased with Maya Danava for his taking shelter of a devotee, asked him to render service unto King Yudhisthira by building a wonderful assembly house. The process is that by the grace of a devotee, the mercy of the Lord is obtained, and by the mercy of the Lord, a chance to serve the Lord's devotee is obtained. The club of Bhimasena was also a gift of Maya Dhanava. Trinadapi Sunichena Tarod Iva Sahishnuna Amanina Manadena Kirtaniya Sadahari Hare Nama Hare Nama Hare Namaiva Kivalam Kalo Nastyeva 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 Gatir Anyata. This is Chapter 15 of the Mahabharata, Part 1. Krishna says goodbye to the Pandavas. Soon after Maya Dhanava began his work on the assembly hall, Krishna approached Yudhishthira and asked his permission to return to Dwarka. Krishna had been away for months and he now desired to again see his relatives. Yudhishthira gave his permission reluctantly, knowing he would miss his beloved friend. Krishna then said farewell, first going to Kunti and touching her feet in respect. Shedding tears, Kunti embraced Krishna and said, "My dear Keshava, you are the supreme soul of this universe. You are always kindly disposed toward everyone, but you especially protect your devotees. From the day that Akrura arrived in Hastinapur, I knew you were thinking of the welfare of myself and my sons. I am confident that whatever difficulties we may experience are arranged by Providence for our ultimate good." Krishna smiled at Kunti and then left her, promising that he would return before long. Krishna then went to see his sister Subhadra and bid her an affectionate farewell. After that, Krishna went to Draupadi, who cried at the thought of his departure. Like her husband and mother-in-law, Draupadi thought constantly of Krishna. She bowed at his feet and worshipped him, praying that he might soon return. After performing the due rituals of departure, and after offering charity to brahmanas, Krishna mounted his chariot along with Satyaki, who had remained with him in Indraprastha, to learn archery from Arjuna. Surrounded by the five Pandavas, Krishna looked like Indra surrounded by the demigods. He proceeded slowly along the royal highway toward the city gate. Thousands of citizens lined the streets, shouting and waving as Krishna departed in his chariot, which were drawn by the horses Shaivya and Sugriva, and which was bearing the sign of Garuda. Yudhishthira mounted the chariot and personally took the reins. Arjuna stood on the chariot fanning Krishna with a golden-handled chamara whisk. Bhima held a white parasol over Krishna's head, while Nakula and Sahadev walked ahead on either side of his chariot, clearing the way. The Pandavas accompanied Krishna out of the city for 4 miles. Krishna then told them to return home. He bowed to Yudhishthira, who tearfully raised him, and then said with affection, "My dear Krishna, I do not know what kind of pious activities we must have performed in previous lives, so that you are now so gracious toward us. Even highly renounced yogis and mystics attain of sight of you only with great difficulty. Yet, we are householders engaged in politics and worldly affairs. I do not understand why you are so kind to us. Krishna smiled and asked Yudhishthira if he could leave for Dwaraka. Yudhishthira assented, and with great difficulty, Krishna persuaded the Pandavas not to follow him. He told them that he would always be ready to assist them whenever they needed him. They need only think of him. Krishna then urged his horses onwards, and the five brothers stood together, gazing at his chariot as it disappeared into the distance. They then slowly returned to Indraprastha, their minds absorbed in thoughts of their friend from Dwaraka, Krishna. A few days after Krishna left, Maya Danava, having completed all his designs and plans, began his actual construction. On an auspicious day, marked by favorable stars, the Asura measured out a piece of land 5,000 cubits square. Before commencing work, he distributed charity to thousands of brahmanas. He arranged for them to be fed with the finest of foods and gave them wealth, invoking their blessings before he began. Maya Danava then erected thousands of golden pillars upon which he constructed a splendorous assembly hall. After 14 months, the hall was completed. It appeared like a mass of new clouds rising in the sky, and its celestial effulgence seemed to darken the sun's rays. It was spacious, cool, delightful, and filled with wealth. With its golden walls and archways inlaid with celestial gems, and its crystal stairways worked with coral, the hall surpassed even the Yadu's Sudharma Hall. In its center was a beautiful artificial pond filled with lotuses and lilies, whose stalks were made of brilliant gems, and with other flowers and leaves made of gold and silver. On its clear waters, there were also real lotuses in full blossom. Swans, Karandavas, and Chakravaks swam about on its surface, and golden-colored turtles played at its bottom. The sides of the pond were set with costly marble slabs studded with pearls, and all around it were celestial flowers shivering in a gentle breeze. The hall was adorned with gardens full of ever-blossoming trees, and the air was filled with a delicious fragrance that mixed with the scent of the lotuses on the lake. Maya Danava arranged for 8,000 powerful rakshasas, known as Kinkaras, to guard the hall. Keeping themselves invisible, the well-armed rakshasas, who had massive bodies and fearful faces, arrow-shaped ears and blood-red eyes, stationed themselves all around the hall, ever alert to danger. The Asura then reported to Yudhishthira that the hall was ready for occupation. Yudhishthira consulted with Brahmins and selected an auspicious day to enter the hall. He fed and gave charity to thousands of Brahmins, and along with his brothers, worshipped Lord Vishnu and the demigods. A ceremony was arranged, and actors, bards, singers, and wrestlers exhibited their skill for the Pandavas' pleasure. A feast was then distributed to all of Indraprastha's citizens. Precisely at noon, the Pandavas, followed by crowds of rishis, entered their hall through the enormous golden doors at its eastern entrance. They took their places on the jewel-encrusted thrones at the head of the main hall. Around them sat the rishis and the many kings who had been invited from other countries. In that assembly were seen numerous famous rishis, such as Asita, Devala, Vyasadeva, Maitreya, Parvat, Markandeya, Jaimini, Bhrigu, and hundreds of others. All the virtuous sages had their mind and senses under full control, and they looked like so many full moons shining amid the assembly. The Pandavas listened respectfully as the rishis recited Vedic histories to invoke auspiciousness. The kings in attendance then stepped forward one by one to make their offerings to Yudhishthira and also to worship him with all honor. Chitrasena, the Gandharva leader, arrived with the Apsaras, along with the Charanas, descended from the heavens, and they all entertained the assembly with celestial music and dance. Worshipped and entertained by such beings, Yudhishthira resembled Lord Brahma, seated in his own hall on the highest planet in the universe. Suddenly, the Pandavas saw Narada, and he had appeared by his mystic power. Dressed in black deerskin, with his golden hair knotted on the top of his head, he seemed like a brilliant sun rising in the hall. Yudhishthira and his brothers immediately stood in respect. They bowed low to Narada Muni, who was accompanied by Parijat, Raivata, and Sumukha, three other powerful sages. Yudhishthira offered the rishis seats, and they sat peacefully as the Pandavas worshipped them with sacred offerings as well as precious gems and jewels. Gratified, the sages were joyous to behold the wonderful assembly hall. Narada then said, "O King, is your wealth being spent properly for the protection of people? Is your mind fixed in virtue? Are you enjoying the pleasures of life? I trust that you do not sacrifice religion for the sake of profit, nor profit for the sake of religion, nor indeed both religion and profit for the sake of pleasure, which easily tempts men." Narada continued to question Yudhishthira on a variety of subjects, his questions effectively constituting a number of instructions on the art of kingship. Yudhishthira sat with folded palms and listened attentively. The entire assembly remained silent as Narada, the foremost of the rishis, spoke. His knowledge and wisdom were famed throughout the universe. Narada was fully acquainted with every aspect of Vedic teachings, and he was renowned as a great devotee and servant of the Supreme Lord. He knew of the Lord's desire, and his movements and actions were always arranged to assist the divine plan. The Pandavas were reverent as he instructed them. The whole aim of the monarch, Narada explained, was to keep his people on the path of progressive spiritual life, helping them advance towards life's ultimate goal of emancipation, while ensuring that they were protected and had all their material needs provided. As Narada finished his instructions, Yudhishthira thanked him and said, O great sage, you have asked me if my study of scripture, my wealth, and my marriage are all successful. Please tell me how I can succeed in these things. Narada, who had ended his speech with those three questions, replied, Scriptural knowledge is successful when it results in humility and good conduct. Wealth is successful when it is both enjoyed and given away in charity. And marriage is successful when the wife is enjoyed and bears offspring. Concluding his instructions, Narada said, O great king, be sure that you are always free of the five evils which assail men. Those five evils are excessive sleep, fear, anger, weakness of mind, procrastination. Yudhishthira again bowed to Narada and took hold of his feet. Yudhishthira said, I shall surely do all that you have said. My knowledge has been increased by your wise words. Yudhishthira replied in detail to all of Narada's questions. When he finished, the sage blessed Yudhishthira by saying, That king who properly performs his duties will pass his days in happiness, and at the end of his life will surely ascend to the regions of heavenly happiness. Part 3. Narada tells Yudhishthira about the assembly halls of the gods. Yudhishthira became curious to learn from Narada about the assembly halls possessed by the demigods. He wondered if there were anyone equal to the one that Maya Danava had built for him. In the presence of the many kings and sages in his hall, Yudhishthira asked, O great Rishi, it is known that you can travel with the speed of mind and go anywhere within the universe. Please tell me of all the assembly halls you have seen. Do any of them equal mine? The Pandava asked Narada to describe in detail the other halls, as well as who was to be found in them. Who waited upon Indra in his hall, and who waited upon Yamaraj? Which fortunate souls attended Lord Brahma in his hall? Yudhishthira's inquiry was pointed. He wanted to know where his ancestors, the great kings of the past, had gone. He was especially eager to hear of his father, Pandu. Had Pandu attained the highest heaven? Yudhishthira waited expectantly for Narada to reply. Narada described the great halls belonging to all the principal gods, beginning with that of Indra. Indra's hall is 150 yojanas long, more than 1,000 miles, and 100 yojanas wide. It shines with the splendor of the sun. It is capable of dispelling grief, fatigue, fear, and weakness. Indra sits there in a magnificent ethereal form, adorned with brilliant crown and bracelets, wearing white effulgent robes. He is decorated with celestial garlands of many hues. By his side sits personified beauty, fame, and glory. Narada named all the rishis and other personalities who wait upon the king of the demigods. Faith, intelligence, and learning are all present in Indra's court, as are sacrifice, charity, religion, profit, and pleasure. But there was only one earthly king from the past who lived there. That king was the royal sage, Harish Chandra. Narada went on to describe Yamaraj's hall. His hall is a full 100 yojanas square and is delightful in every way. No pain of any kind exists within that hall, and it contains every object of desire, both celestial and human. It could travel anywhere in the universe according to its owner's will. Time and death personified sit on each side of Yamaraj, and countless rishis surround him. Gandharvas and Apsaras entertain the occupants of the hall with music and dance. The scent of divine perfume fills the air. Narada named the personalities who wait upon Yamaraj, which included all the monarchs in Yudhishthira's line, ending with Pandu. Narada then described Varuna's hall, then that of Kuvera, the lord of wealth. Both of those halls were opulent beyond imagination, being filled with gold and gems, and inhabited by numerous gods and rishis and their shining consorts. Then Narada told Yudhishthira about Lord Brahma's hall. The actual form of that mystical hall cannot be ascertained, as it can assume various indescribable forms from moment to moment. The hall is made of celestial gems which constantly change hue, and it appears to be suspended in the firmament by its own power. The self-effulgent hall knows no deterioration, and it continuously increases the happiness of its occupants. Brahma sits there surrounded by the personified forms of mind, space, knowledge, sound, touch, form, taste, scent, nature, all the elements, and the prime causes of the universe. Present also are the sun, moon, and the stars and constellations. Joy, aversion, asceticism, understanding, patience, wisdom, forgiveness, fortune, and all the Vedas. Yudhishthira and his brothers sat in rapt attention as Narada spoke about the immeasurable splendor and opulence of Brahma's hall. He named all the chief progenitors and all the principal demigods and goddesses who waited upon Brahma. When Narada stopped speaking, Yudhishthira began to question him further. He wanted to know why was it only Harishchandra, out of all the great kings of the past, who had attained to Indra's abode. Yudhishthira also wanted Narada to tell him about his meeting with his father, Pandu. What did Pandu say to Narada? How was Pandu faring now in Yamaraja's assembly? Narada explained that Harishchandra had reached Indra's planet because he had performed the great Rajasuya sacrifice. That sacrifice involved subjugating all other kings and distributing charity to hundreds and thousands of brahmanas. And it had set Harishchandra apart from other kings. Narada then told Yudhisthira that his father Pandu had given Narada a message for his son. If Yudhisthira could also perform the Rajasuya sacrifice, then both he, Yudhisthira, and Pandu could reach Indra's kingdom. Pandu felt that his sons were now capable of performing such an incomparable sacrifice. If they were successful, then father and sons would be reunited in heaven. Both Narada and Pandu understood that the demigods had their own purposes to fulfill through Yudhisthira's performance of the Rajasuya sacrifice. It was all part of a divine plan meant to free the world of the demoniac influences. There were presently too many evil kings and kshatriyas inhabiting the earth. Before beginning the sacrifice, Yudhisthira would need to overpower them. Only then would he be able to perform the Rajasuya. And only then would he be able to establish piety and virtue throughout the world. Narada looked around at the five brothers who sat humbly before him. Narada knew they were dear to Lord Krishna, and Krishna wanted to use them as instruments to fulfill his own desire. His desire was to establish religion upon the earth. Narada then concluded, "Therefore, O King, you should perform the Rajasuya sacrifice. The celestials have ordained it. I shall then return when the sacrifice begins. Now I am going to Dwaraka, for I desire to see Lord Krishna, under whose will this entire universe is moving." Narada stood up to leave, and Yudhisthira requested him to ask Krishna to again visit Indraprastha. Narada agreed, and the Pandavas bowed before him and his companions. The rishis then disappeared into the sky by their mystic power. After Narada's departure, the Pandavas continued to live peacefully at Indraprastha. But Yudhisthira was contemplating how he might perform the Rajasuya sacrifice. He knew that it required vast wealth. It also necessitated his being able to establish his indisputable ability and power over all the other kings. How would it ever be possible? There were certain kings who would never accept him as their emperor. Kings like the mighty Jarasandha of Magadha, for example. Jarasandha was wicked, and he had already conquered all the districts surrounding his kingdom. Yudhisthira had even heard that Jarasandha had imprisoned the kings he defeated with the intention to sacrifice them to Lord Shiva. Jarasandha was ambitious. He already had designs on the emperor's seat, and he was not an easy opponent to defeat. Yudhisthira realized that he would only be able to perform the Rajasuya sacrifice with Krishna's help. Yudhisthira's kingdom was flourishing under his leadership. and his citizens were devoted to piety. They had everything they could desire. The Pandavas saw the citizens as family members. Yudhisthira was more than a father to them, and no one in the kingdom entertained any hostile feelings toward him. Gradually, Yudhisthira became known as Ajatashatru, one who has no enemy. And due to his religious leadership, the demigods were also pleased, and thus the kingdom was not afflicted by fire, disease, or other natural disturbances. Still, thinking about the sacrifice, Yudhisthira called an assembly of ministers and advisors. When they were all seated in the great council chamber of the Pandavas hall, which was called the Maya Danava Sabha, Yudhisthira began to address them, his voice resounding like a bass drum. I wish to perform the Rajasuya sacrifice. Having been asked to do so by the great sage Narada, I can understand that the demigods must surely desire it. I do not want dominion over this earth for myself, but I wish to fulfill the purpose of the gods, and especially that of the Supreme Lord. Yudhisthira also considered that if he invited Krishna to the sacrifice, he could arrange that Krishna be honored as the chief person present. That would establish the Lord's fame and position all over the world. Krishna was superior to even the greatest of gods, such as Brahma and Shiva. Yudhisthira expected those gods to attend his sacrifice. So if people saw them worshipping Krishna as supreme, then his position above those deities would be established. Then the learned priest Daumya spoke. O King, you are worthy to become the emperor of this world. Therefore, perform this sacrifice and establish yourself as such. We shall light the six fires and chant the sacred mantras. But first, you must gain the acquiescence of the world's monarchs. After that, you will surely become the undisputed king of this wide earth. Having gained the permission of his priest and counselors, Yudhisthira discussed the means by which he might proceed. Krishna would certainly provide infallible advice. Yudhisthira then thought of Krishna all the more intensely, praying that he might soon come to his assistance. Thus ends the 15th chapter of the Mahabharata. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.